So we'll indulge in a couple of minutes of connoisseurship over Larry. I went online to see what the shtick on Larry Poons was, other than what I remembered, because I was alive then. And I remember personally living in New York when he went from being known for this to these very heavy drip paintings that were also done in acrylic. And they were not necessarily so well received. Way his career was rather brief. But the thing that I found interesting was he mentioned that he thought his two greatest influences were Mondrian and Barnett Newman. And I don't think at first look you would think that. At least I didn't. But we're going to live those halcyon days of the 60s now and talk about acrylic paint and every other kind of paint. This is a jar that happens to be yellow-orange azo that is of that vintage, which I remember well. We have this jar courtesy of Alexandra Truitt. This is one of her mother's jars of paint from that time. And it's gotten a bit hard. This is what, if you went to the art supply store, you would get now. The archives here does have a record that Larry Poons used Liquitex brand acrylics from Permanent Pigments, as did Alexandra Truitt, which at that time, with the cachet of Liquitex, was just like Winsor & Newton was for oils, considered really the best acrylic. These are two jars that are also from Alexandra Truitt that were given to the museum when the museum purchased one of her pieces. In theory, to retouch the piece if it were damaged. In fact, things don't last that long. It's all separated. The acrylic in the bottom has hardened. But what is interesting is in the 60s, when many, many artists went to acrylic from oil, there's a relationship, as there is in all art, between the art itself and the materials. And hard-edged painting in the 60s and the acrylic medium run hand in hand. And I wanted to explain in this kind of dopey Mr. Wizard way here about acrylic, specifically acrylic emulsion. Very briefly, in the late 50s, there was this paint called Magna. Magna was invented by a man named Leonard Beaucourt as a replacement for oil. And it was used by Morris Lewis very famously. This paint essentially is just pigment, like this ultramarine blue, but the medium, rather than being oil, isn't this fun? I have all these things. This is linseed oil, a 19th century jar of linseed oil. Comes from flax seeds. Ground up, this is the oil that you mix with pigment. If you made Magna, you would, instead of oil, have used a material like this. This is a synthetic medium. Its drying properties are extremely controllable compared to oil. But it has the liability when it comes to painting that it doesn't have the range that oil has. It dries so quickly, you can't really paint wet into wet. And the solvent that affects this is a solvent that will, in fact, as you go to repaint, will start to solubilize the layer that you have already painted. Whereas with oil paint, the solvent you use, say turpentine, is not going to resolubilize the areas that have already dried. And so the potential for this material became very limited. And for the craft market, the Sunday painter, much, you know, maligned, it still used a solvent, and that was considered. At that time, health issues were starting to come into the fore. And so a version of this was needed, and that's where acrylic emulsion came from. The notion of an emulsion is like this. This happens to be oil and vinegar. Vinegar on the bottom, because it's red wine vinegar, and oil on the top. They don't mix. But if you shake this, you very temporarily have a mixture. And if you were to be able to paint with it suspended this way, what you would use is that medium would have the properties of both. And in a way, that's the concept of an emulsion. In fact, this is an emulsion, very like what's in Liquitex paint. It's an acrylic emulsion. It is made up of tiny, tiny, tiny beads of acrylic resin, like this, suspended in water. And that's why it's white. Other emulsions are egg, milk. They're all in milk. It's a natural oil suspended in water, but they all look like this. Through the magic of chemistry, it is maintained this way. It doesn't go back to separating like our salad dressing here. But what happens when it dries is, you, because of the water component, you can use water as your solvent. But when it, as it dries, the water evaporates and all those tiny, tiny little beads of resin fuse together and form a layer that no longer reacts to water. And as a consequence, when you paint with Liquitex, you don't have to have an organic solvent, so it's safe. But you end up with a permanent paint layer, unlike, say, watercolor or some other material where the solvent is water. It's a permanent paint layer. Again, because of chemistry, it's also an extremely stable layer. This is an extremely stable material. And there's no evidence that paintings such as these, done in the 60s, have degraded at all. Now, oil paint is very permanent as well, but it does discolor. It gets yellower over time. It gets more transparent over time. It cracks, and so on. So in a way, this is kind of a magic material, with, unfortunately, some limitations. If you were to look at this painting close up, you would see these raised areas. All of these, all three of these paintings, if you look at them with magnification, or if you're very young, you can just look at them with your eyes, you will notice that there are halos of other colors all around, because he changed the color over and over and over, and it builds up and up and up. It is my conjecture that part of the reason acrylic painting did not eventually take over for oil, among various reasons, is this. People could not get over the idea that it looked like plastic. Even though much art now is assemblage, collage, found objects, stuff, those things have a relationship to the outside world, the found object world. But I think there's a residue in one's mind that art supplies, per se, are somehow an elevated phenomenon. And when Larry Poons made his later paintings, which were, oh, like this thick, I mean, I can't even imagine how much paint. Some of them were half the size of this wall, still weighed a ton. I remember looking at them thinking, well, they look like big plastic waterfalls. And I think somehow that just doesn't cut it. I mean, I think it's a peculiar phenomenon. The asset of this material is it can be done very flat, totally homogeneous layer. The degree of matte and gloss exactly the same, because you're mixing them in a jar, you're not mixing them on a palette. Oil paint has matte gloss irregularities, so a little more oil here, a little less there. The downside is, because it's an emulsion, it can only hold so much pigment. There's only so much room with the little beads in the water for pigment particles to be in there. And that means it can never have the intensity that oil has. Because with oil, you grind the pigment with the linseed oil, and you can build up the amount of pigment as much as you want till it's almost just pigment, if you want. But with this material, in order for it to become within the material of the emulsion, there's only so much it'll absorb. Consequently, acrylic paintings are intense visually, but they don't have the snap of an oil painting, say, with like a glaze or something, where it's just like ferociously intense. Nor can they be transparent or translucent in that glazing sense. Even though they developed all these materials, this is gloss medium. Gloss medium is just the medium that's in the paint without pigment in it. If you put this gloss medium over the acrylic painting, it doesn't really bring out under layers. It just makes it shiny. So there's a whole limitation of sophistication with this material. Okay, does anybody have a question? Anyone find this interesting at all?
So you're pretty much saying that acrylic is lesser than oil.
Well, acrylic has very limited use. The limited use is much, yes, I'm not saying it's lesser, but it's much less versatile.
Because it seems to me like acrylic works really well with creating flatness.
Right. He does.
Even though there's a little bit of depth, that's about coming out into the room, so the flatness seems to be more important.
Right. But it's a one-note Charlie. It does what it does very well, but it doesn't do other things. And I think artists found themselves wanting to be able to evolve and change. And I think that's its limitation. I mean, it's still used probably more than oil, because there's a whole market. It's interesting to look at paintings in this collection from, say, the 70s, in which people used acrylic even in realism, and how there's no blending to speak of. So it lends itself to almost a staccato kind of pointillist technique. But I think those artists then ran into that issue. But yeah, it's you couldn't make these paintings without an acrylic medium, and they are highly successful as what they are. But that's kind of that.
Is this one over there, though? It looks like the canvas is actually kind of stained.
Yeah, well, that painting, apparently, according to the archives, that painting, the yellow is fabric dye. And fabric dye, that's why it has that modulated appearance. It's very different from the others, isn't it?
I've read that the paint film is softer than acrylic.
Yes, it is.
Dirt.
It can be a problem. The thing is that the people who make the artist supplies are so, they've got the chemistry down that they have found this midpoint where it's not so soft that it collects dirt that can't be taken off, but it's not so hard it's likely to crack. There have been stories, acrylic paintings put in airplanes and sent, you know, way up in the air, that at very low temperatures they will crack. But they are able to, you know, there are acrylic media that are deliberately made much softer. And they're not so good as a painting medium.
Is that fabric dye, is that more fugitive?
I don't know enough. You know, before this, I realized I don't think any of these paintings have recently been examined. Meaning, Susan, who would do that, hasn't taken a sample, and we don't. I don't know. It's that kind of funny ochre. That's an interesting painting to the extent that it's clearly the fabric is meant to read as fabric. And it's like that period, like Alan Shields was one, and, you know, and, I don't know, the stain paintings where the canvas was not a surface as an illusion, it was meant to read as the material. And it's effective, but how much it might have changed, I don't know. It depends on how color fast the... Part of the revolution, I was gonna go into pigments a little. I did want to show you my fake Jackson Pollock from the thrift store, painted by someone named Alan. I don't know if it's Alan's first name or last name. But what's interesting about this is, if you can see the gloss, this is another paint, house paint, that sort of oddly rose to prominence in the 50s and 60s at the same time this did. Artists stopped using, artist material started using every kind of paint. Think of de Kooning and obviously Pollock. And this is normally a paint that's an alkyd, which is a synthetic oil. It's usually referred to as lacquer, only because it mimics real lacquer, which comes from a beetle. And the point that is, I think, always interesting to make about this material, I am now going to make, which is, this is so show and tell. A few days ago, I poured linseed oil. I'm going to hold this thing. It's banana. I poured linseed oil. Now I'm talking to these things. I poured linseed oil and this acrylic resin in that jar on these two pieces of paper. And now today they look like this. The linseed oil at one point looked just like this. But over the week, it has migrated out and out and out because, of course, it's still not fully dry. The synthetic, however, holds the shape pretty much as I poured it, which brings us to Alan and by inference Jackson Pollock. Another blessing of synthetics, in a way not unrelated to the prunes, is that you can formulate the resin to a chain length, a molecule size, whatever you want. And the analogy that's always made is, if this is like a plate of macaroni, this is like a plate of spaghetti. It all intertwines and holds the record of what you did as you poured. Whereas this can't possibly. It's all another way of saying, without a synthetic medium like this, there couldn't have been a Jackson Pollock. Because you couldn't have made an oil paint that poured. It would have just spread out, and you'd have sort of a big mess. And I think, so even though this is a vastly different material, it's not vastly, but its use certainly is different. This is commercial, this is fine art. This is highly glossy, intended to be. This is often, usually what they call eggshell. This is sort of look. Nonetheless, as Bob was saying, or someone, you couldn't have that painting without that material, and you couldn't have this painting without this. And I think the root of conservation thinking and all that is that. Like, what about the materials the artist chose specifically make that work of art exactly the way it is? And I think that's what these are. Any other questions, comments, or... I mean, I have all these wonderful... Like, this is ultramarine blue. I always like to tell this story because we're not really... We can talk about Dick a little bit, but it's invented in 1820-something. It was invented in 1820-something because real ultramarine, made from lapis, came only from Afghanistan. And there were wars going on in Afghanistan. in the early 19th century. So the French government set out a contest to see who could synthesize an artificial ultramarine. And they did, someone did, and that's why it's called French ultramarine. I happen to be wearing a lapis ring as a visual aid to remind ourselves it's extremely, even if you have lapis, you have to grind it and grind it and distill it, and you get very, very little pink. But, and of course, in another form, this is what Klein blue is, apropos of the Klein show we had several months ago. I don't think anything else I have here. Although, this is old film. Old film is made of cellulose nitrate, slightly combustible. It is, in sheet form, the same as the medium of our fake pulp. If it's a medium, it's called pyroxylene. If it's in solid form at room temperature, it's called cellulose nitrate. This is the material of our Corsad pep strainer that we have in the lab. It's all disintegrated. This gets quite brittle, although this is a reasonably good shape. So that's the miracle of 20th century or 19th century chemistry. Same exact material can be a liquid or a solid. Can be have one property emphasized over another. Here's a plastic. I don't know what this plastic is. I do know it's so brittle it just crumbles, like our pets know. And yet another plastic of the same era won't have degraded.
Mark, I have a question. You said that the paint's built up. Is it adding anything to the paint, like to make it build up a little? Or are you just like, painting it over?
I think my experience is that that's what acrylic does.
It's just being applied to thickly.
Because it is thick.
So he's not adding anything to make it thicker?
I don't think so. I think that the thing with acrylic paint is there's such a body to an emulsion coming out of here. You can thin it down like watercolor, but it retains very little coloring. So people tend to use it thickly. I mean, what's sort of interesting is how many of these circles have a gray circle inside the final size of the circle. So, like here, where it's well within. And you know, that's what happens when you do something and in a minute, practically, or two, it's dry. So you do it again, and you do it again, and you do it again. Oil paint, you can't do that. So there's a decision-making discipline that has to go on. That might be a good thing, you know? I mean, many of these colors have been changed any number of times. Yeah, it is three-dimensional, and I don't know, it's fine, I don't know if it matters, but it does, it's inevitably going to end up three-dimensional if you put on at least 2, 3, 4 layers. Anyone else have a question or a disagreement? Any kind of way?
And so some of those finger shapes.
Well, I think that he used a color that was close to the red.
Was that why?
Yeah. What's interesting about when I was reading up on him just is how prone Larry Koons was to being very judgmental about qualities. I mean, he would talk about how Mondrian paintings were, in a sense, open-ended, and Fritz Glarner was kind of an ex post facto Gestalt artist. Why they failed is when you look at them and you look at them again, they look just the same. Mondrian, every time you look at them, they look different. And he thought his successful paintings, if you looked at it, you looked away, if you looked back, it looked different than the first time. Because they're not art, it's impossible, really, even to look at them. I mean, when you look at that one, you get so many after images happening. So in a way, you're kind of cheating, you know? I mean, your eyes can't possibly even really see it. in exact terms. But that was kind of his driving interest. So I think here he was trying to say he wanted you to be lost in the painting, to never really have it be open at all. And it's interesting, I think, that he saw Mondrian. Because most people, I think Mondrian is very exact. But to him, that exactness meant that you could still reinterpret it, reinterpret the composition, wonder about it. That it was alive. It wasn't a dead design. It was constantly asking me to look more. And that's what I think was very interesting.
Can we go back to light? Is that related to where we came?
I don't know. It's spot on.
No, I don't know. And what I read a few things. See, titles weren't particularly much. So I'm not sure how important they were or not. Nor do we even know if he's still alive. I thought he is alive.
Yeah. He actually has a sense of life.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
This one here?
Yeah.
Where is it?
Has a studio somewhere out in the city, and he's still painting. So.
Yeah.
He had this meteoric career. One of the taglines was that Larry Collins was famous for being famous young. He was very famous in a show in his mid-20s with all sorts of other people.
What other materials did you work with?
I don't know enough to know other than the transition to those big heavy things, which were called something like elephant paintings. They look like heavy elephant skin at the bottom. I mean, they really, I do remember them. They were predominantly gray and lavender and that kind of thing. A lot like Alinsky, only Alinsky is very light, a little color poking in here and there, but sort of a huge sheet of paint, acrylic paint. I mean, if it were oil, it wouldn't be dry now if it were painted 40 years ago. Impossible. Okay? That's good enough?